Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting and jam-packed episode of Modern Day Philosophers. I'm your host, Danny Lobel. You're the listener so far, and hopefully you will continue to be. Today's episode took a little longer to get out because everything that could go wrong did go wrong from the very inception, from the very interview itself. This is the last of the interviews that I recorded in New York around Thanksgiving time. It's with my good buddy Mike Lawrence, who is absolutely hilarious. And I'll tell you about how everything went wrong in just a second. But first, I want to tell you that maybe you know someone who would like to try for $100,000.
$100,000, you say? And you say it in that voice. $100,000, you say?
Yeah, maybe it's you. Maybe it's you who would like to make the $100,000. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'll beat you all out for this. You know what? I'm not even going to tell you the ad. I'm going to be the only one competing. Okay, the Beach Body Challenge is a very cool contest, and Focus T25 is the perfect program to help you get the winning results that you need. What you do is you go to www.beachbodycoach.com/thebawbs, spelled T-H-E-B-A-W-B-S, or go to the website www.t25.com and use the coach ID 316601. That's 316601 is the coach ID. Go on there and get in shape. Do it so I don't have to. But maybe I will. I'm going to get in shape. I'm going to do it right after this nap and snack. No, I'll do it. I will. I mean it. I'm trying. I'm really trying, people. I'm going to do it. People. You know, people who say people a lot. I'm going to do it, people. Come on, people. All right. I'm pumped up to give you this episode because everything went wrong and we still managed to get it going. It took a little longer than usual, but you got the episode coming to you now. The interview, like I said, was the last of the ones I did in Thanksgiving time in New York. I recorded it with Mike Lawrence at his loft space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, my old neighborhood. But he lived in a part that I didn't live in and I wasn't too familiar with. And I was running around frantically in New York with my cell phone on low battery with no home base nearby to plug in and charge. And what happened was my cell phone died on the subway on the way to Mike Lawrence. And I had his address written down, but I didn't have clear directions on how to get there. And I didn't have his phone number memorized. So I'm walking around and it's pouring rain. It's also so dark. It's like one of those darknesses that's like cripplingly dark. Sometimes New York can be so dark that like the darkness itself kind of, I don't know, maybe this is all in my head, but I just feel like sometimes in New York, it's so dark that the darkness is something to fight through. So I don't have an umbrella. I'm getting drenched to my core. I'm getting so soaked. Do you ever get so soaked you kind of feel like it's inside your body too? Like you're not just soaked outside. Like, you could feel it in your spine inside. I'm so soaked. I'm drenched. I'm running around the neighborhood frantically trying to find Mike Lawrence's apartment with the address I had, stopping people on the street who are rushing by with their umbrellas. Excuse me, do you know the neighborhood well? Do you know this neighborhood? I'm trying to find this out. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And, you know, nobody was stopping, and I'm running around. Finally, I get to the building that his loft is in, and there's no buzzer. He didn't tell me that I'd have to call him to get in. There was no buzzer, and I should have looked on the address that there was no buzzer to buzz. And so I had to wait till somebody left the building to break into his building and run in behind them. And I went up. I found his apartment. I also didn't have an apartment number. He just gave me the address. So I was, like, knocking on doors. You know, Mike Lawrence? No. I find his apartment, and we didn't have as much time as normal to do this interview, so it's a little shorter. But it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, and Mike Lawrence and I have been friends for a very long time. I was the first one to put him on stage when he got to New York City from Florida. I was running a little show in Hell's Kitchen, and I remember Mike Lawrence came asking for stage time. Nobody was putting him up. No one knew who he was, and I thought he was just hysterical, and I still do, so I'm glad to have him on the show. I'm glad to expose you guys to the wonderfully funny Mr. Mike Lawrence. So that was the first part of what went wrong. The second part is, my mic volume was way too low, and the amazing Logan Heftel, who has been secretly and quietly, well, not secretly, I've mentioned him before, but quietly working behind the scenes on this show, mastering the audio, since the very first episode, was able to save it, but it did take a little longer and a lot of work on his behalf. So thank you, Logan. It's just me, Logan, and Alex. That's the whole team here. But he pulled through, and we have the episode for you now. And it really is, like, I don't know, I'm not a woman. I can't talk about childbirth too much, but I do feel like this, and sometimes I think these episodes are like my babies. Is that weird? It might be weird. I admit that. But when they're uploading, the audio is uploading to the server, I kind of feel like that's a labor of some sort. Like I'm giving birth to another episode. And this was a difficult labor. This baby made it very hard to... This is such a weird analogy. I want to tell you before we get into the show, because we do have a little more time since the interview, like I said, is a little shorter, that I've been very fortunate over the past 2 weeks to get to go see two comedy legends perform. One of them has, I've made no secret about it over the years, has been one of my biggest influences, Billy Connolly. Billy did my old podcast, Comical Radio, and he has promised at some point to do this one, so I'm excited for the prospect of that one day happening. But man, I saw that show and I was like, I gotta get on stage more. I wanna do things. I'm excited about stand-up again. He made me so pumped. He's just like a incredible ray of positivity and hilarity. And like, you just, damn it, you gotta go see Billy Connolly. If you ever get the chance, go see him. The guy's just incredible. And gets more incredible every year. I always see him whenever he comes to town. This is the first time, obviously, I've seen him in L.A., but I used to go see him in New York. And anytime you can, go see Billy Connolly. That's a treat. And the other thing is I found these really cheap tickets to see Jerry Lewis. And those of you who know that I don't have a lot of money, and I'm kind of struggling. So for me to go buy a ticket to see a show is a big deal. But for Jerry Lewis, I was like, I gotta swing it. I gotta do it somehow. It was his 88th birthday. And he did this show where he shows clips from his career and does a Q&A. And I'm so glad I went, because it re-excited me about life. It made me think, damn, because what I saw up there was not an 88-year-old man. That was a young guy, younger than me even almost. He was just a young guy up there who happened to be 88, and he was having so much fun, and he was so quick and sharp and funny. And he did this Q&A, and audience members went up and asked the dumbest questions, and he just gave these hilarious responses. As one guy goes, Mr. Lewis, my wife and I are filmmakers, and in 1967, I don't know, whenever, you wrote a book on the art of filmmaking, and I've wanted to get a copy for my wife and I, but it's very hard to come by one. I only found one dog-eared copy up on eBay, and it's selling for $1,000, and I don't have $1,000, Mr. Lewis. How do you recommend I can get a copy of this book? And without missing a beat, Jerry Lewis goes, can you do 600? Like he's the one posting it on eBay. That was one of the funniest. He was just so quick. Damn, he was so good. He was so good. I've always been a fan of Jerry Lewis, but I didn't know what to expect from that show. And man, he was great. Got me so excited. Between him and Billy Connolly, I'm more excited than ever to get on stage and to grow as an artist, as a comedian, and I'm more excited than ever about getting older, which I never used to be very excited about at all. So it kind of gave me a lot of hope and optimism. It's like, if I could be doing any kind of, it doesn't have to be a big theater like that, but if I could do even a small little theater at 88 and have fun like he did, then it's worth getting to be 88. That looks like a goal. That looks like a goal worth trying out for. Donate to the show, by the way, if you haven't, or even if you have, it would help me a lot. I don't just use the money for Jerry Lewis tickets. I use it to live off, for rent, for bills, for food. I need your help, and counting on you. Please help me. Go to moderndayphilosophers.net. There's a donate button on the left side of the screen. If you send a donation of $20 or more, I'll send you some tweaked audio earbuds. They gave me 30 pairs to give away. I still have 24. Six people were kind enough to meet the challenge. Some have done 20. Some have even done more. And I sent them some free tweaked audio earbuds as a thank you. don't know if you could call it free, but because they donated. It's hard to say. It's a gray area. Gray area on that one. But they got the tweaked audio earbuds sent to them, and you can too. You just go to moderndayphilosophers.net and send me a donation to the show. It goes a long way. I got 24 more to go. Let's do it! And by the way, if you just want to get some Tweaked Audio earbuds, you could always go to their website, tweakedaudio.com, put in promo code MDP, and get 1/3 off, free shipping, and a lifetime warranty or guarantee. I don't know what the difference is, and I don't know which one it is, but you get something. Something for your lifetime. Something happens. Standupcrap.com. You know them, you love them. Go pick up Eddie Pepitone's A Great Stillness. It's up there for download for $9. You can also pick up my CD. I would love that. Some Kind of Comedian. Some of you have. Some of you wrote me nice things. Some of you posted on iTunes and left some nice comments there. Thank you to all of you. Thank you, everybody. Email me at thecomical@yahoo.com, by the way, if you ever want to say hello. That's kind of like the greatest thing about doing this show is hearing from you guys. So please say hello. Introduce yourself. And I will write you back. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what you think of the show. All right. Without further ado, except the intro song, I give you my talk with the wonderful Mr. Mike Lawrence, ladies and gentlemen. Mike Lawrence.
Hello, and welcome to Modern Day Philosophers.
Modern Day Philosophers.
Having failed to pay attention in school, Danny Lobel, now older and wiser, will attempt to learn basic philosophy 101. Our young hero will be joined by today's top comedians, philosophers all their own. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Danny Lobel.
Modern Day Philosophers.
All right, I'm here with my buddy Mike Lawrence. How you doing, man?
I'm good.
Thanks for doing the show.
Thanks for having me.
What you been up to? Jump into casual talk.
Yeah, things are good. you know, it's about to be Thanksgiving. That should be fun. I'm probably dating this. You know, it should be better than Thor 2 was. That was terrible.
Yeah.
I equate everything to comic book movies.
That's perfect, because when I asked Alex to find a philosopher for you for this show, I said work off the comic book angle, so I didn't even need to bring it up. You did. That's great.
Oh, nice, man. This is the worst year for comic book movies by far. Every one of them stunk.
Wouldn't it be a worse year, one of the years for a long time when there were no comic book movies?
No, I would rather there be no comic book movies than Man of Steel.
Really?
Yeah. I would take nothing. It is better to have not loved it all than to have watched Superman snap someone's neck and your childhood at the same time.
You take it so personally. Which
I do.
I find that so fascinating about you. Like, you authentically connect to it on such a deeper level than... I mean, look, I had over 1,000 comic books in my collection as a kid.
Yeah.
I was... by all means, a comic book junkie, but I didn't retain it in some way like you did, and I'm sad about it, to be very honest with you. Like, I feel like I wish I could have held on to it. And all my comic books.
I'm just a sports fan with more back knee. I mean, that's all it is. It's the same way that, you know, it's just funny because, like, when a dude yells at a TV because a 21-year-old isn't doing what he wants, it's socially acceptable. But when I yell at a fictional adult who often isn't, barely a child, so it's not pedophilic, it's weird. You know, like, yeah, that's like college football to me is basically you're a pedophile if you're cheering on these young guys and you're like, yeah, look at them run, you know. But what I do is seen as weird.
Yeah, I don't see it as weird.
I appreciate that. Yeah,
you know,
but I attack it. I have that masculinity. I attack it in that same way. Like, and I love my favorite dudes are like Cleveland Browns fans and, you know, fans of losers, and because, you know, the Chicago Cubs legacy of not winning a World Super Bowl and, you know, in years. Like, I think that
underdogs.
But there's something beautiful about that. And that's kind of how I like to approach it. Like,
Do you root for underdog superheroes too? Like, you
except not the movie Underdog. That looks terrible.
But what about, like, so Superman is like the complete opposite of an underdog. He's got every power, right? He's impenetrable almost.
Which actually it makes him a cinematic underdog because he's so hard to portray, right? Because there are unlimited possibilities, and right. The point of film is to go in one finite direction and stick with it. Mm-hmm. So you're always fucking something up. You know, when a character's been around for, you know, he literally had his 75-year anniversary this year. It's like, how do you, you know, nail this character? And I think it's really hard for people to do that. And what ends up happening is every Superman movie is always a reflection of its time. So even though people love, like, the Christopher Reeve movies, when you look back, they are so late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And there's some flimsiness there. You could always tell you're watching a movie set. There's, like, this cheesiness there, a hokiness. It's like, I mean, Batman's the same way. They're so of their time. You could have a deaf person watch that Tim Burton movie, and they'll just go, 1989, you know? Like, they just see a bunch of guys that look like your dad's friends, you know, dancing around at an art museum. And even though they can't hear the shitty Prince music, they know, 1989.
Right.
You know?
So you think that's more the case with a Superman movie than, let's say, a Batman movie? Or
I think both very much. Those more like Spider-Man, there's like this kind of timelessness. It always feels current. In some way, they were ahead of the curve with that. But those Superman, Batman, that they started out in the 30s, like right, like they came out at the same time the Nazis did. You know?
Right. Do you think that's a difference in the way that DC versus Marvel portray their heroes?
Yeah, in some ways, I mean, there's so much more reality in the Marvel characters, you know, that they're in New York, not everyone has their own city, that there's this, they're always failing. You know, the whole point is that, like, that's the difference is, you know, Batman had nothing to do with his parents getting murdered. He was 8. He couldn't do shit about it.
Right.
You know, Spider-Man could have prevented Uncle Ben's death.
Right, right.
And what is the more fascinating story?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you could have done something and you didn't, and not, yeah. You were too young to do anything.
Right.
Or a baby being sent in a rocket ship. It's just power is boring, you
right.
know? When you look at it in comparison to Bruce Banner, who had to push a dude out of the way, and because of his selflessness... selflessness,
yeah.
Yeah, but the selfishness of building the bomb, but then the selflessness of pushing the guy out, you know, makes him a fucking monster.
So it's much better mythology.
Yeah, because there's more pathos and sadness, you know, the weapons, dealer who then gets kidnapped and becomes Iron Man.
Right.
It's often consequences. Your fuck-ups have, you know, consequences.
Right.
And so, now you have to redeem yourself.
So can you really blame the Superman movie for being bad, or is it just a product of a product which is flawed?
No, you can, because a Superman movie has to, you know, because Superman has to be better than humanity. And so Superman has to be portrayed as being better than us.
Which is why I always feel Jerry Seinfeld connects to Superman. It's that same attitude, you know?
Yeah. Where are my parents? Why is my planet gone? I hate you, Zod. Seinfeld really did a lot for the bass guitar. No one gives it credit enough.
Yeah.
For the innovations of jazz.
Sure. Night Court, too, I think.
Oh, yeah, that was more saxophone.
Yeah.
A lot of sax in the 80s.
Yeah.
The Alf theme.
Yeah.
Every 80s theme song sounded like it could be a coffee commercial. It
must suck to be a sax player that used to have so much TV work. Yeah. Scoring all these shows.
Or a Casio keyboard, dude. You're making so much money and getting so much puss in the 80s.
And now you're doing Russian weddings.
Yeah. You can't even get one in the state. Doing the same songs. It's the different love of the family. If you were white and could sound black, you were fucking... You were singing a song about Danny Tanner and his dead wife.
Yeah.
See, Danny Tanner is more of a Marvel character because he was an adult and he lost his wife and then had to be responsible to his 3 children and did so by bringing in his rebel brother-in-law and goofy stand-up comedian friend.
Yeah. You know who I was a big fan of was Moon Knight. And I think it's because I got on board from issue one.
Yeah.
I had the first Moon Knight, and I had it in mint condition. And I had
Doug Monk and Bill Sienkiewicz, yeah.
And I had the first until I stopped collecting from the very first one.
Yeah.
It was a hero of my time. It came out during my time.
And he was, I mean, in many ways, he is like Marvel's Batman. But the fact that he's so, like, obscure in a way makes him feel more like yours. There's no Moon Knight movies, so he's still pure in a way.
Right, yeah, that's true. So why do you think it hit you in the way that it did?
That's the power fantasy. I wasn't born the way I wanted to be and wasn't given the exact life I wanted. And, you know, I didn't have a planet that exploded, but I did come out of an exploding marriage. So that's close enough. My parents didn't get shot. They just wish they could shoot each other.
Right.
And so it was that feeling and getting picked on, and, you know, and then you see these power fantasies.
I mean, I literally had such a huge collection, and it was recently destroyed in Hurricane Sandy. And I had them all with the cardboard backs in the plastics, you know, categorized.
Oh, man.
And I'd go to the comic book store in Long Beach, New York every Friday. You know, that was like my ritual. I'd get the new stuff and it's
Holmes
all,
can be replaced, but
it's
that
all,
issue where Moon Knight fights Bushmaster can't.
It's gone forever. Yeah. It's all gone. And when I went to sort through the wreckage of Hurricane Sandy and help my parents at the house, I found my Moon Knight issue one. I found it soaked, completely drenched. And it's one of the only things I took. And I literally separated the wet pages one by one and put paper towels between them. And I dried it out, and it's all like, you know, it dried out all wet, and I don't know how to describe it, but I have it still, you know, and the rest of it died. You know, Superman dies, Superman comes back to life in the black and in the white plastics.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember
Which
that?
Which those aren't worth any. Those killed the business. those comics killed Superman and the comic book industry. They just destroyed it. It ruined everything about comic books. It's really fascinating.
Doomsday was doomsday.
Yeah.
For comic books.
Well, because everyone thought it was going to be worth something, but, you know, if everyone buys something, then it's not.
I remember lining up to get it.
Oh, yeah, the armbands, and it just completely, you know, Marvel went bankrupt. DC always had Warner Brothers, so they were okay, but it just completely crippled everything.
So why do you think, like, me, who I was so entrenched in it and loved it so much.
Why'd you get out?
Why'd I get out, and why'd you stay in?
You may have found other things, you know. You found other interest. It got sick after a while. You saw through it, and I just, I don't know. And I held on. But I'm also, that's my personality. I mean, I worked at a McDonald's for 7 years. I do not know how to let go of things. It's the best in the world, you know.
It's good, what? And I would say that's probably a great superpower.
Yeah, I mean, Batman-like obsession, yeah. You know, and I mean, it worked for comedy because I refused to fail, and I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this and go out every night and get up at least 10 times a week.
That's great.
Yeah, so it has benefits, but then it has, you know, low points when you're going to see Thor 2 and, you know, it's going to suck and it sucks.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Here's how much I was into comics when I was a kid. I wanted to be Stan Lee when I grew up, like basically to an extent that I started drawing and writing my own comic books, photocopying them in the school photocopy room and selling them because I didn't get allowance money. So I had to find ways to get money. So I had two series going. The more popular one being Clover was the superhero's name.
Was he Irish?
I think he was an Irish American, but he wasn't actually from Ireland. And he wore like a cat-like mask, and he had a little clover right in the middle of his eyes. And when I look back at it now, I just laugh. So he didn't have like a Batmobile. He had a limo.
Yeah.
Because it was the 90s, and I thought that would be very cool if he just had a limo. And
yeah, no superhero ever has a limo.
Right. He just had a very cool limo, and he had a Robin-type sidekick named Blue Jay. and I sold them, and there are kids that have Facebooked me, like, not kids anymore, but from my class at the time were kids that have recently Facebooked me and like, I still have Clover episode one, man. You better make it. This thing's going
to
be
worth money.
But see,
that's a part of why you probably got into comedy and committed to that and did the 10 show thing, because it's like you plunged into things, you know, instead of like, I have this idea for a comic book someday. And I think that's like so important, especially when you're young. I mean, I did slam poetry for 8 years,
right,
and I thought I was going to change the world with my poetry. I made my own t-shirts, a poem a day keeps the therapist away, and you know, it's just all these. I wrote a movie about a slam poet named Johnny Angel who kills himself at the end, and literally the newspaper headline at the school was Johnny Angel dies, no one cares. And I believed in it, and we tried to film it and everything. I mean, and that was like when I started comedy, I had just finished writing and starting to film a movie called Candles, which was about a couple that broke up during a hurricane, which happened to me and my girlfriend of 6 years. Wow. And the whole point was to try to get her back.
It's so poetic.
Oh yeah, man.
The hurricane invaded our lives.
But you know what, it was fun. Like, there's nothing worse than half-assing, you know, through life. Like, when you see guys now and like, I mean, too much ego is you know, scary, and too much swagger, you know, like half the people at the Comedy Store, like that, right, that arrogance, you know, it's like, yeah, ugh, you know, where they're always on. But at the same time, there's nothing worse than like, you do comedy, I guess, not really. It's like, fucking, you know, own up to it. You're just afraid of being judged.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
just
totally what it is.
Because if you can't commit to the idea of being a comic, how are you going to commit to your bits on stage?
Sure.
And, you know, because that is, it's not the actual, you know, being like, even, I don't even think it's like being looked at by people, other people, that scares people from public speaking and all that. You know, the reason that keeps people from comedy, it's that idea of saying like, I do this, and this is what I want my life to be. And,
right. I'm fully committed to this. And if I fail, you know that I failed at something I was fully committed to.
And it's like, I'm not gay. But I had to come out to my parents a lot over the years over a bunch of stupid shit. You know, Mom, I think I'm a poet. Mom, I think, you know, it's at least if you're gay, it's, you know, it's like, oh, well, that's accepted, you know, in some places. They can't take you to the South, but I can't take you anywhere as a slam poet.
Yeah.
You know,
do you think the comic books, they seep into your consciousness in everything you do on some level?
In some ways, yeah. I mean, the New York that I get to live in and see is the New York that Spider-Man swung through and the Fantastic Four, you know, lived in. I mean, and that's fun. Like, that's how I grew up.
They
shape
New York. Your world. You know,
because I lived in Florida, which is the anti-New York, you know? And so, I mean, that's where people go when they give up on New York. I'm ready to die now.
You reversed it. Basically, you Benjamin Buttoned your way.
Yeah, exactly. I swam the other direction. It's like, fuck, you know, like, it's just that whole thing of like, you know, fuck culture. But that's a part of, you know, I think, you know, so many like older, you know, people, Jews, you know, my grandparents were New York Jews that moved to Florida, and they, you know, and they were like,
they
said to my
family,
they told my mom and, you know, their child, they're like, look, you want some of our money, you better come with us to Florida. And I almost feel like a part of, and I don't think so much then, but a part of like why so many people leave New York for Florida, like, I'm just sick of difference. You know, I'm just sick of like, all right, I know some of them speak Spanish, but at least it's not Chinese. You know, like there's this like, God, I fucking
gotta just get away from diversity.
Because there's people always say like, it's so accepting in New York. It's not, it's tolerant. It's a difference. We don't love each other. We don't care about each other. We're tolerant of each other. Look, you want to believe what you want? Fine. I'll believe what I want. Let's never fucking look at each other in the eyes. Even us as, like, you know, comedians, Like, look, half of you are German and don't even speak my language, but they're giving me $25, so I'll try to entertain you. I won't say I can, but I'll try.
Yeah.
Even though in your mind, like, there's got to be a better way.
Cool. Well, do you want to jump into this philosophy?
Yeah.
I should plunge into it. Like, that is kind of what I did here. I did the same thing with the comic, but I know nothing about philosophy. I'm like, I'm just going to plunge into this now. Let's see.
Yeah.
See how that works out. So this is who Alex found for you, a guy named Marcus Tilius Cicero. Does that sound right? It's Latin.
Yeah.
Cicero. It's C-I-C-E-R-O.
Cesaro.
Cesaro.
There's a wrestler named Antonio Cesaro.
Okay. Well,
he just swings people around. Maybe there's some philosophical implication there.
Alex says, because Mike is into comic books, which share similarities to mythology and epic poetry, there's a philosopher who wrote epic poetry, Cesaro. Cesaro wrote in his dialogue, De Legibus. De Legibus? That sounds just like a leggy bus.
Yeah.
It's a D-E.
It sounds like something from the Flintstones. It's a leggy bus.
Hey, Wilma, look at this leggy bus.
Yeah.
L-E-G-I-B-U-S. I don't know. On the laws that real human law was to be found inside the soul of every man. While governing laws are good, they must be informed by a sense of reason and right and wrong. Okay. That makes sense. Marcus Tilius Cicero, if I'm saying that right, and if I'm not, you get the idea, lived from the 3rd of January, 106 BC, to the 7th of December, 43 BC.
And he had three names?
Three names.
But everyone had one.
Like, he was ahead of the time of his time.
Or a serial killer, right?
Yeah.
That's the theory.
Yeah. He was a Roman philosopher, a politician, a lawyer, an orator, a political theorist, a consul, and a constitutionalist. He came from a wealthy municipal family of Roman Esquirian order.
Oh, we're already not in common then.
Yeah. And is widely considered one of Rome's greatest orators and prose stylists. His influence on the Latin language was so immense that the subsequent history of prose in not only Latin but European languages up till the 19th century was said to be either a reaction against or a return to his style. Wow, that's impressive. That's a big influence, I would say.
Yeah.
It's either against him or it's because of him. There's no way that anybody else is doing anything original. They're just either rejecting him or it's not anybody else's own. All right.
So when someone sounds like him, do they say they're being Caesarian?
Caesarian?
Did he coin the C-section?
Imagine being a comic with that kind of, like, anybody says, oh, you're either doing him or you're just rebelling against what he did, but you're still.
Yeah, it's called Lenny Bruce. And no one read Cesaro and no one listened to Lenny Bruce. It's a prerequisite to reference Bruce. You cannot have listened to him.
Have you ever listened to Lenny? Never?
It's fucking boring.
Really?
I watched 20 minutes on the Trio Network. That dates it. Which was around when he was alive.
Yeah.
No, but they showed like one of his like, you know, I guess sets. It was like him at like a fireside in what seemed like a hotel reading congressional papers.
Uh-huh.
And I was like 19. I was like,
oh, but that's already once he got all lawyery.
Yeah, like, yeah. Oof.
But some of the early stuff is good. And also, if you put it into the context of its time, you know, no appreciation for Lenny.
Yeah, and I'm sure Pong was fun. But I grew up with Genesis, so fuck it.
All right.
I just, the stuff that I've seen, I just felt, you know, dated. But I know he inspired other people who were probably much better.
According to Michael Grant, the influence of Cicero upon the history of European literature and ideas greatly exceeds that of any other prose writer in any language. Cicero introduced the Romans to their chief schools of Greek philosophy and created a Latin philosophical vocabulary with neologisms. What's a neologism?
No, a newly coined word or expression.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Such as humanitas, qualitas, quantitas, and essentia. distinguishing himself as a linguist, translator, and philosopher.
I feel like Cesaro was the Moon Knight of his time, where it was like he was kind of popular then, but no one remembers him at all.
Right.
Someone's like, I got the first appearance of Cesaro.
The peak of Cesaro's authority and prestige came during the 18th century Enlightenment, and his impact on leading Enlightenment thinkers such as John Locke, who we all know, David Hume, is that how you'd say that? H-U-M-E, David Hume?
Yeah.
And Montesquieu was substantial. His works rank among the most influential in European culture, and today still constitute one of the most important bodies of primary material.
I feel like he wrote his own bio.
It really does sound like that. Like it does sound
he wrote
like
that himself. He is available to philosophize at both clubs and or colleges. Yeah, it's like easy there.
and then you always know it's the one because they has opened for such acts as, and then they just name people that once dropped in on a show.
They use words like fresh. With. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's a fresh and up-and-coming philosopher.
It's so funny how comics market themselves in their bios, and it's in a way they would never talk about that just because they feel that's how it's supposed to be.
It's a wish fulfillment. You write about how you wish you were perceived.
Right, but I don't think they do. I think they just write in the way that they think they're supposed to write it, you know? Like, oh, this is what it's supposed to be.
I am an acclaimed funny man.
Oh, man. Okay. Of the Roman history, especially in the last days of the Roman Republic. Though he was an accomplished orator and successful lawyer, Cicero believed his political career was his most important achievement.
You ever feel like people like accomplished more back then because there was no Twitter or like YouTube comments and shit? Like if Benjamin Franklin was around now, like someone would just call him a fatty and he would cry and never do anything.
You think?
You know? Yeah. Stop flying that kite, fatty. I'm sorry. You know? Like,
yeah, you're right.
You know, like that. Like, and the only way that you could see how someone looked was by a painting that someone was hired to do.
Right. And you could always be like, oh, that's not an accurate representation.
Everyone had great arms because they were paid to draw them that way.
Okay, though he was a successful and accomplished orator and successful lawyer, Cesaro believed his political career was his most important achievement. Yeah. It was during his consulship that the second Catilinarian conspiracy attempted the government overthrow through an attack on the city from outside forces. And Cesaro suppressed the revolt by executing fire conspirators without due process. During the chaotic latter half of the first century BC, marked by civil wars and the dictatorship of Gallius Julius Caesar, Cicero championed a return to the traditional republican government. Following Julius Caesar's death, Cicero became an enemy of Mark Antony in the ensuing power struggle, attacking him in a series of speeches. He was proscribed as an enemy of the state by the second triumvirate.
I think that's it.
Triumvirate and subsequently murdered in 43 BC.
So that's totally me. Yeah. I mean, you look at me like that dude was murdered in 43 BC.
He made yeah. the
Walter White existed back then. And he was horribly murdered.
I saw that post that you put up, and I mean, I should have put it together on my own. Where you're like, Walter White looks like me at the end.
Yeah.
People, if you listening to this, Google Mike Lawrence, and if you've seen Breaking Bad at the end, it's stunning, the resemblance.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right down to the glasses.
I did it for me.
He even switched to your glasses just to make it perfect.
The stains and the,
How'd you feel about the end of that?
Oh, it was fantastic.
Give it all away, but it was it was very epic.
It was perfect. And I will. You should have seen it by now. This is the effect of Cesaro. We learned about him, and then we went on to have more fulfilling and interesting conversations.
But it's just us rebelling against him. You want to read the quotes from him?
Okay, let's see. For there is but one, and that he was from Rome, right? So I'll do it in a horrible Italian accent.
All right.
For there is but the one essential justice which cements society. Oh, Luigi, I'm so sad. And one law which establishes this justice. This law is right reason. I know it's also shitty Dracula. Which is the true rule of all commandments and prohibitions. Whoever neglects this law, whether written or unwritten, is unnecessarily unjust and wicked. Mamma mia.
That's a bigger meatball.
Yeah, it's so fun.
So what does it mean?
I don't know.
One essential justice, which cements society. What does that mean?
And one law which establishes this law is right reason. He never says what the law is, which is the true rule of all commandments and prohibitions. Whoever neglects this law, whether written or unwritten, is necessarily unjust and wicked. I don't
know what that means.
That there is
one law, but it's written or unwritten.
Yeah, this CD Youngie does a shitty job of translating.
One,
it's a translator. And then this other one: for what is there more hideous than avarice? More brutal than lust? More contemptible than cowardice? More base than stupidity and folly?
What?
Twerking.
Twerking.
Russell Crowe's performance in Les Miserables. They're 20601.
I felt like was just Hugh Jackman asking him a favor. Like, I worked really hard on this thing, you know?
Yeah. And, make me look good, mate.
People are just going to think the whole thing's just magically good with Hollywood magic.
This bitch, she fucking gets her head chopped off, fucking dies 10 minutes later, wins an Oscar. I'm fucking working the whole time. Crikey. I'm a Saudi. You got rid of the leggy bus. It's a bus, but it's got her legs.
Wilma!
Hey, buddy, you got to get on this Lego bus. And the Lego bus, oh, God. I had a conversation with James Adobian about the abuse of the appliances on the Flintstones.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were
always brutal to them.
And they would I always viewed it as anti-Semitism because they always had Jewish voices, you know. it would be like the record player, the bird record player, and then he would look at you and he goes, "I'm sick of playing this tune." But it always had these like
cranky old Jews, yeah. Or the lawnmower. Yeah. Jeez, when am I gonna get a break?
Yeah, it's a pig eating the grass, and he's like, "Oh God, I'm tired."
but for some reason Dino
didn't talk and just treated well.
Yeah. So maybe
I always wanted like those animals to just like quote civil rights, you know, like just like the fucking elephant that, you know, had to wash them. He had to look at their naked prehistoric bodies and just look at you go, "Free at last." Why, oh my, we're free at last.
Yeah. All right. Here's our last quote. Let's see what we make of it.
The welfare of the people is the ultimate law.
What do you think? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except for people on welfare. No, I agree with that.
The welfare of the people is the ultimate. It's not applied.
And he uses the word law more than Stallone did in Judge Dredd.
I don't know that reference.
That's okay.
I'm sorry. You had me on every other one, which is impressive because I usually references just fly right by.
If you don't get Judge Dredd, but you get, you know, Flintstones, we're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why didn't he just kill that fucking saber tooth? He knew he was going to throw him out every
night. Yeah, every night. Every night, leaving him in the cold.
I think the Flintstone says more about philosophy than Cicero did.
Yeah.
And the futility of that. It's the existential crisis. Every night, you're going to be thrown out, but you're powerless to stop it.
Right.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting, just like taking the Flintstones and philosophizing the whole Flintstones.
Oh, yeah.
What else have we got on that? Nothing.
Why do they rip their shirts?
Yeah, the bottom. What's that?
Yeah.
It's just a style.
The arms too.
They
were all sleeveless back then.
Yeah,
I love that. I love that Flintstones and people from Jersey now dress the same. Hey, Bonnie, I'm gonna go smush a bitch,
and they have the same names. All right, Fred.
And fucking, and then like Snooki's getting like fucked, but like she's getting fucked on the back of a whale,
and someone's going and bam, like, bam. Yeah.
And the whale's like, it puts the hump in humpback. That musician got a lot. Fucking, let's get the fucking Seinfeld bass player.
Yeah.
And the sad horn.
Yeah, I wish that was more true, that the welfare of the people was the ultimate law. I think that's I think we really missed the boat on that one as a country, but
that one's proven wrong every time you try to log on to the Obamacare website.
Right, yeah. It's the ideal version of the law, but it remains just as philosophy. I don't think it will ever truly be the case. I wish it was, but I don't. And even if it was the case, I don't think a society could really function like that, where the welfare of the people was the ultimate law. It's just too.
It should, but it's ideal.
It's just.
But it's also
too
using the word
Eden,
ultimate.
You know?
Yeah.
And then everything would fall apart. There's got to be some evil in the world, I think.
Yeah.
Like I said, evil for good. You got to have Russell Crowe in there to really appreciate Hugh Jackman.
There you go.
Well, anyway, this has been fun.
Thanks, man.
Thank you. And, I wanted to tell you one more superhero thing. I don't really see, how did this connect so much to the superheroes?
A lot of ultimate law, a lot of extremes, I feel, you know.
Yeah.
You had to read these in a shitty Christian Bale voice. The welfare of the people is the ultimate law. I mean, the welfare of the people is the ultimate law. There you go.
All right. Now I see the connection.
Yeah, these all sound like things that adult men would never say.
I thought
there is but one essential justice which cements society, and one law which establishes this justice, and that law is that Affleck should never play me. Swear to me.
I had a pretty good, I think I had a pretty good superhero reference the other day. I was talking to a young open micer who was trying to look funny to some famous comedian.
Yeah.
And he was just, it was just hurting him.
Yeah, yeah, oh
and,
yeah.
And I felt for him because I see he just doesn't get it yet. So I was telling him, I tried to explain it and I had pretty good superhero reference to explain. I said, basically, in your heart, you know that you're Batman. And now you're going up to Superman, who is Bill Burr or whoever he was talking to. Maybe it was Bill Burr. But I go, you're going up to Superman right now. And you really want to convey to Superman, I'm Batman.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm Batman. But this Superman, he doesn't know that Batman exists. Okay.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you're just a guy with a utility belt. What are you talking about? He's like, no, I'm like you in some way. But you just really have to become Superman for Superman to, you know, you have to, I don't know.
Just admit that you're Moon Knight.
Yeah. And then just fade away.
Yeah. Being washed away.
Yeah.
By the hands of God. Well, thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Mike. This was great.
All right, man.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you, Mike Lawrence, for being on the show. ModernDayPhilosophers.net. Donate to the show, please. I'll send you earbuds. TheComical@Yahoo.com. Write and say hello. Go to iTunes and leave me a nice comment and 5-star rating. That's free, and it helps me a lot. And I would love you to do it because it helps the whole process. As does telling a friend about the show. Share the word. Don't keep it a secret. Don't keep it too underground. Because I need to build this thing, man. I got to build it up, man. I don't know why I went into that. You know what I got to do? I got to build it up, man. I got to build this shit up. Again, I don't know what that voice was for, but please do spread the word about the show. Please keep listening. Thank you for listening. And I'll talk to you next Tuesday. All right, everybody. Have a great week. Bye-bye.